karyotype, microarray, fish. These have been all around and existing even before I was born. BioNano comes in that it's different because it's sort of like a turbojet that can fly at a sort of a wide range of altitudes. So it essentially offers this sort of Swiss Army knife solution to combine all three traditional tests.
Hello, everyone. This is Guy, and welcome to the FinTwit podcast. I just finished a fantastic conversation about bionanogenomics with Christina Wren. She had recently published an article on BNGO and was generous enough to come on the podcast to talk about it. She gives us a little background on why she decided to dig a little deeper into BioNano. She went over what makes it so unique. She talked about planes to better understand optical genome mapping and went on to explain why she feels it could replace gold standard cytogenetic tests. We even chatted about the stock price action, which has disappointed many longs as of late. And she reveals if she has purchased shares since having published the article. I also asked her if 23andMe could be a potential partner and selfishly asked her to explain the difference between what Lexigene does, which is PCR, compared to BNGO's OGM. Christina also shared some other technologies she is excited about in the future, and I really look forward to reading more of her articles going forward. Remember, nothing shared on this podcast is financial advice or recommendations to buy, sell, or hold companies that are mentioned. The conversation with Christina was a lot of fun, and here it is. Hey, Christina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Guy.
Awesome. So I think the listeners might be interested in first knowing what brought you here on this podcast. I have a particular interest in diagnostics. And in the process of researching the space about a year ago, I ran into BNGO on YouTube and simply at that time just added it to my watch list. Now, if we go all the way back to February 2021, towards the end of that month, the stock began to come down significantly from its highs. And towards the end of the summer this year, I decided to start doing some research in BioNano. Thinking it looked like it was potentially a really good buy at those levels. And this eventually led me to your article on healthandwealth.substack.com. And you titled it BioNanogenomics, the Swiss Army Knife of Cytogenetic Testing and More. So this article was actually recommended to me by someone on Twitter that I regularly chat with. And he basically said, if there's one piece of information I need you to read to better understand BNGO, it's this article. He sent me the link and he said, just, you know, take the time to read it. So I took his advice and really enjoyed it. So what I was thinking, Christina, to get started, I was wondering if you would be able to go over with us why you're interested in genomics and on a high level, what basically led you to dig deeper into BioNano specifically.
Yeah, sure. And well, first of all, very flattered that a fellow reader of my article had so strongly recommended you to read my piece. That means a lot to me. So I really appreciate that. So I guess to sort of answer your question on a high level, both about genomics and BioNano, a little bit of context about me is that I went to Stanford for undergrad and I majored in biology. So, and I quickly realized during my time there that genomics was sort of this area that I really wanted to dedicate my life's work to. And so I then became a genetic counselor to pursue this connection between this cutting edge of genomic science and also simultaneously the humanity of counseling patients. So, you know, your question on why genomics in particular, I think it's still really at its nascent stage. And I think we're really at this inflection point where the pace will only begin to continue to accelerate. So I really view the 21st century as the century for biology. And so that's kind of where my interest in genomics comes from. And why I chose to dig into bionano. So actually the story of that is I actually knew Rich Shippy before because, I saw that he recently joined this company called Bionano as their chief business officer. And at the time I'd never heard of it. I thought it was just some sort of obscure research tool at the time, frankly. And why I thought that was because I, as I was just mentioning before, I was trained in clinical genetics myself. And so I found it really odd that I hadn't heard about what optical genome mapping was, which is Bionano's underlying technology in my network. And like no one was talking about it or anything. So I just was just curious. I wanted to know more about it. Like what is this all about and why aren't more people talking about it yet? So that's really how I ended up researching and then ultimately deciding to write this piece on Bionano. And I guess before we go into more about the article and my thoughts on it, I just want to preface and say that I'm not inside Bionano whatsoever. I don't have any financial incentives or affiliations with Bionano. So my thoughts definitely don't represent Bionano's. Just things that I've researched.
Perfect. And so as you were talking, you mentioned Stanford and you mentioned you believe genomics is, I'm paraphrasing here, but at the beginning, basically, which I believe as well. And I believe it might be one of the sectors that will grow quicker than anything else that we've ever seen. I'm just curious, at Stanford at the time, was this a known field or space, or like if you were to run into somebody in the hallway over there, would it, like if they had asked you what you were studying and you had said genomics, would they have looked at you strangely, or was this sort of common knowledge?
So you're talking about specifically for genomics, not like, you know, optical.
Exactly, for genomics, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I was not I have not been out of school for very long, frankly. So I think at the time when I was in school, genomics was definitely accepted as a very exciting field to be involved in. So I think if you go and talk to people and say like, hey, I'm interested in genomics, they would be like, that's awesome, cool. And I also want to sort of paraphrase, I came across this quote from venture capitalist, previously IVF doctor, David Sable. He had put it this way. Basically, he views biology as an innovation theme park for as long as our careers can last, because there's just so many opportunities that will come about in these, you know, next few years and next few decades. On the other hand, genetic counseling is definitely not as prominent. That's a component, given that genomics is such a sort of new field, it's understandable and natural that most people, if you, for example, go to a party and say, oh, I'm a genetic counselor, their immediate reaction will be, you know, well, what exactly is that?
Fair. Yeah, no. It's really interesting, though. And I think it sounds like a very promising field and so much more to discover. And that's what really got me interested in it. I want to live in a world where it's common to be able to cure cancers and detect cancers much earlier, or different other kinds of diseases much earlier. And I think this is the space that's going to make that happen. So Christina, I'd like to dive right into Bionano. And I was wondering, is there anyone out there, like, is there a company or an organization doing anything close to what Bionano is doing right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good question. And I think the answer for my answer would be, to my knowledge, no. Bionano is really the only digital optical genome mapping or OGM on the market right now. So it's sort of a league of its own. There are some other mapping technology companies out there, but what they do involves restriction enzymes that basically go in and try to cut up the DNA. But BioNano is really the only one using a single molecule optical imaging technique by using these sorts of fluorescent tags to tag across sites along the genome. That being said, are there other existing technologies out there to do to detect structural variations within the genome? Of course. And that's what's known as the cytogenetics field. And cytogenetics has been around for decades, much longer than I have, frankly. And there are a lot of existing technologies out there for cytogenetics in particular. So there's karyotyping, which is essentially you taking a picture of the chromosomes on a very high level to see if there are extra or missing chromosomes, such as one of the most common examples would be trisomy 21, which is a Down syndrome. There is microarrays, and there's also FISH. So there's definitely existing technologies within the cytogenetics field, but nothing really anything close to combining all of them together in a way that BioNano does.
Thanks. I think as an investor, I can sort of start to see why it's getting so much attention in the markets, because you're always sort of looking for something unique that a company has, or maybe a head start that they have compared to the competition or other companies in the field. And it sounds like BNGO clearly has some of that going on. I noticed in your recent article that I mentioned earlier on BNGO, you mentioned that BNGO was potentially the Illumina of mapping technology. And that's a pretty big statement. So I was wondering if you would be able to expand a little bit on that.
Sure. I think I view it pretty simply, really. So I view BioNano as being well positioned to become the Illumina of mapping technology, in part because they're the only ones that are offering OGM or optical genome mapping reliably and at scale at this moment in time. So they essentially own this type of genomic testing within the market. If you look at Illumina and how their play has sort of panned out over the past couple of years, they focused on short read sequencing. And I don't quote me on the number exactly, but they've really, effectively monopolized the DNA sequencing space. Something as high as, 90% of the sequence data is generated using one of Illumina's sequencing machines. So if you look at it in terms of the corollary of how BioNano might play out, I don't see how it could be a stretch to say that it would be the Illumina of mapping technology. And I think they could do something very similar. That being said, I think just being totally fair and calling it out, I think Illumina's market is probably much bigger than mapping technology. But, that's why I had made that analogy and statement within my article.
Fair. And Illumina is, if I'm looking at it from an investor's point of view, I mean, the market cap of Illumina is massive. So I think the market or investors have already recognized that. I want to take a step, not a step back, but I want to sort of look at it and sort of talk a little bit about some of the things that investors might be wondering about at this point. So I listened to a few podcasts and some videos earlier this year where people were super bullish, and some of them were essentially, it was clear they were all in BioNano. And I guess, there were many YouTube videos and Twitter threads getting a lot of attention. Many had extreme confidence. And I've seen this before. You see this in crypto a lot too, but Many were predicting that the price at the end of this year could be between $40 and $60. And if we look at January, this was happening around January, February, near the top of the bull run. So like everything was going up. New investors were making 10 to 30x their money in small caps and micro caps. What I was wondering, and you may or may not have an opinion on this, but do you think some of these people in general are still holding BNGO? I believe currently it's closer to $4. Mm-hmm. And just wondering if you have any thoughts on what happened. Do you, I'm asking a bunch of questions here, but do you believe people were expecting possibly too much too quickly? Mm-hmm. Or is this maybe just a side effect of what is happening in the genomic space across the board? Because at one point we had companies valued $5, $10 billion with no revenue. So mm-hmm. just wondering your thoughts on this.
Yeah, Guy, I, you know, these are a really great set of questions, and I think it's really interesting to think about, but I think it's also one that I don't feel like I can speak too much on. The stock market behaves in ways that's frankly really unpredictable to me. Obviously, as investors, we hope that when we identify a promising company that's doing great work with great people and building a great product and service, that it also reflects the stock price. And that's probably why there was this sort of optimism and interest within BNGO earlier this year. But at the same time, we know that there is not always a perfect correlation between the company, the product, and the stock price. And that probably also rings true for BioNano. Especially within the biotech space, I personally find valuation still remains a really strange concept for me to understand and grasp. The other thing that I did wanted to mention was that I actually didn't realize how big of a Twitter following BioNano has until I posted my article and saw that it really resonated with people. It was being widely shared, and people seemed to really like it and how I broke it down and talked about it in a sort of approachable resource for anyone that may be interested in investing in the biotech and specifically genomic space. I would say that, and you've probably been around on the FinTwit community longer than I have, but I've noticed that it's in general sort of this double-edged sword where on one hand, it can expose you to some really valuable information and curate some resources that you wouldn't have otherwise come across. And in fact, I do go on Twitter and I look up the ticker symbol for things that I'm interested in just to see what people are talking about. But on the other hand, it can also sort of make you really vulnerable to herd mentality and sort of making rash investment decisions based purely on FOMO or this sort of fear of missing out. If, you know, thinking of, you know, oh, if everyone's talking about it and if everyone thinks that it's going to go up to, you know, $40, $60 by end of this year, then obviously I need to jump on this bandwagon before I miss this opportunity. So that's really all that I can say about it. Unfortunately, maybe that's not as satisfying answer that maybe you or some of the investors are hoping for.
I love your answer, by the way. I think maybe people that are super excited would maybe hope for something more like, you know, a price prediction or anything like that. But I think your answer was absolutely great. I think valuating these companies, it's the space is still so new. It's very hard to value these. And I remember talking to some value investors back in January, February, and, you know, fair enough. Some of them were really cringing at the valuation, saying like it made no sense and all that. But I'll be honest, it's very hard to predict. And at the end of the day, the market will value it the way that it values it. And what I like about it is I love seeing the optimism around the technology and the space. And I think it's very healthy overall that people are excited about it. And I think it will lead to us eventually having better technology, better diagnostics, and I believe it will make a better world. So regardless if it's valued correctly or not now, or if it wasn't before, to me, it's not that important, as long as people are putting in money as long as people are responsible with their money and not putting in money that they can't afford to lose, or that they can't afford to lose a portion of it, at least short term. So what I'd like to do, thanks for that. And I would like to, if you don't mind, diving a little bit more into the actual technology behind BioNano. And first of all, I was wondering if you could talk about what are the different methods to read the genome and how do these differ from the methods that BioNano uses. And I want to mention, I really loved your example in your recent article where you used different types of planes to show the differences. So feel free to go over those details or to use anything else that might help the listeners better understand this concept. You don't have to use the planes, but I just wanted you to know that I did like that, those analogies. Because I feel like it's not necessarily a concept that's easy to grasp for most people.
Yeah, certainly. Okay, so now we're getting into an area and field where I feel like I can speak on a little bit more intelligently than maybe
perfect.
The investor angle. And reason being is because I'm a genetic counselor by training, and it's our job to be able to clearly communicate these really complex science concepts to people in a really approachable way. So I think you're right. I think you're exactly right that it's actually pretty confusing to most people and unintuitive, in that there are actually many ways to read DNA and our genomes. And I say it's counterintuitive because I think when most people think about genetic testing, they're just like, oh, well, there's just one method, right? There's 23andMe and that's it, right?
Exactly.
And so I think that's a little bit of a false sort of misconception and myth. So we'll definitely get into that, about this fundamental question of like, how do we read DNA? And there are, as you mentioned, there are a lot of different methods, and each method, they serve different purposes, just like you would have separate tools in your toolbox. You would have a wrench, you would have a screwdriver, whatever other tools that you would have in your toolbox, they serve different purposes. And same thing with these different, technologies to help us read DNA. So kind of a high level, I'm happy that the plane analogy has sort of resonated with you and also several other of my readers. I'm by no means an aviation expert, but I was just trying to link it to something that I feel like we all have experience with or understand a little bit more. So the idea that different technologies, it also, sort of different technologies, they determine the level of granularity that you can read the genome. So similarly, with different types of planes, they, fly at different cruising altitudes. So from low to high cruising altitudes, for example, at a low cruising altitude, there's helicopters, which average around like 10,000 feet. Then there's a piston engine or a turbo propeller or jet. So all of these, they have different cruising altitudes, right? So if you're flying across a city, the altitude you're at determines basically how well you can make out what's below you. So in recent years, there has been a lot of attention focused on refining what's under the 10,000 feet view through DNA sequencing by companies like we were just mentioning, which focuses on short read sequencing. So that I would consider like a kind of like a helicopter function below 10,000 feet. Now, what's equally important is being able to reach the for 40,000 feet and above view. And that's what sort of the field of cytogenetics does. And I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but there are tools that exist right now, but it's peculiar because these are the same antiquated tools that we've been using decades ago. So karyotype, microarray, FISH, these have been all around and existing even before I was born. So BioNano comes in that it's different because it's sort of like a turbojet that can fly at a sort of a wide range of altitudes, anywhere from 15,000 feet or so to maybe 50,000 feet. So it essentially offers this sort of Swiss Army knife solution to combine all three traditional tests of cytogenetics in one platform and detect things that and also detect things that existing methods would otherwise miss. And that's technique is what I've been sort of referring to. It's called OGM or optical genome mapping. There's some other ones, but for the purposes of sort of remaining on topic and on trend of BioNano, I will just keep it at that for now.
Yeah, thanks for that. So you mentioned optical genome mapping, and I've often seen it in literature referred to as OGM simply. Mm-hmm. Do you mind going over that? And I mean, I'll leave you to decide in how much detail you want to go into, but maybe try to explain it in a way that a general person like myself would understand. Mm-hmm. It, because I did try to prepare for this and understand it as best as I could, but it is quite complex. So I guess the simpler, the better for us.
Yeah. No, happy to stay on the high level and try to get everyone on the same page here. So OGM, okay, so what's the purpose of OGM? Why do we want it? What does it serve? How does it help us? So essentially what OGM does is to help detect large changes in the genome. And these large changes in the genome are called structural variations. So what do I mean by structural variations? So let's go back to the plane analogy that I was just mentioning. So imagine you're flying across the San Francisco Bay Area. And structural variations are basically things that you see that shouldn't be there. So maybe, not sure if you're too familiar with SF, but let's say that, you know, maybe the iconic Golden Gate Bridge is entirely missing. That would be a deletion in the genome. Or maybe there's just this huge island that emerged out of nowhere. That would be an insertion. And so structural variations are things that are being detected by OGM. Specific examples, these are, again, just terms. You don't necessarily have to know what they are, but you'll just hear them being mentioned. So it detects, for example, insertions and deletions, the two examples that I just gave about the Golden Gate Bridge and huge island that came out of nowhere. There's inversions, which basically flip-flop sections of the chromosome material in a way that shouldn't be present. There's duplications, translocations. So the purpose of all this is that sometimes these structural variations can cause disease in humans. Examples can be some rare neurodevelopmental disorders within kids, or certain types of cancers are very prone to having structural variations. And that's essentially what optical genome mapping helps us do, is just to see if there are these structural variations and if that can help explain or predict or diagnose sort of a disease state within a human being.
Okay. That's really interesting to me. And as you were talking, I sort of thought of a question that mm-hmm. I have for myself. I'm wondering, I can imagine there are almost an infinite amount of variations that could exist. And a question I had was, is there something in place, or maybe a company like BioNano could be involved in this, in discovering the different variations? So how could they go about doing tests or being involved in a way that we could get to a point where we don't have these thousands and thousands of variations that we don't even know what they do or if they cause problems or things like that. Is that something that is ongoing currently?
Yeah, I can't speak to any specific projects that I'm super aware of, but it's certainly a application of BioNanos and their technology OGM, which I think is very important because that's totally 100% true of what you were just saying about variation, in that there's sort of caveat in important to keep in mind is that more information is actually not necessarily within itself better. So when we're talking about structural variation, we always need to keep in mind of improving the patient experience, and not merely because it's technically feasible. So what that means is that, you know, we actually need to understand what these variations mean and what variations actually contribute to impact negatively in human health versus variations that maybe don't impact our health very much. Maybe some of us have some of these structural variations that we're just walking around having, but we don't know about because, you know, we haven't gotten tested and we're totally fine. So, and as genetic counselors, we see this firsthand about the consequences of new information that have this sort of uncertain value. You know, like, now that we've given this information to patients, what do they do about it? And that's also kind of, I think, part of the reason why genetic counselors are the first to be skeptical of new technologies, because innovation shouldn't, innovation shouldn't exist for the sake of innovation. Now, going back to your question in particular about, is there a role that BioNano can play in being able to properly annotate all of these variations? I think totally. You know, I don't necessarily know exactly how that would play out or how that would look like, but I can give you an example of where in research context, they're doing, you know, for example, there is something called the Vertebrate Genome Project, which basically aims to try to sequence the genomes of 70,000 plus species in our world. And they're using genome mapping to help aid the accuracy of the sequence calls. And it's a way for us to identify, okay, well, so what is a reference genome of, let's say, this, you know, random species that we don't know too much about. And a similar application can be applied, I think, to various disease states and also fields within human health. So like oncology or pediatric rare disorders, for example. So I think I'm speaking broadly here, but I definitely think that there's a room where BioNano can play a role in.
Yeah. Where I'll be honest with you, where my mind was going, and it's a bit of a selfish reason. I currently have 23andMe pretty high on my watch list. I don't own any shares, but I am considering it as a future investment, ticker symbol ME. But I often compare this company to like Facebook when they first started. They had all this data, but it wasn't really super clear how they were going to monetize it, or like people were saying, well, Facebook, that's, you know, that's great. There's billions of people that use it, but how are they going to make money? And we all know how that turned out. But what I was wondering is I'm wondering if there's a world where BNGO could partner with 23andMe, and then you have all these people submitting samples, and you'd be able to test these people, and you already have information about them, like maybe conditions that they have or symptoms that they experience, and maybe being able to sort of put two and two together, like, oh, we found a variation. This is a patient that has GERD, or a patient that has Crohn's, and now we're sort of getting some more some data that can answer some questions that we've had for years. So that's sort of where my mind was going. I don't know if I'm totally out to lunch on that one, but it's something that came to mind.
You know, it's interesting. I'll never say never, but I personally doubt it. I think the probability of 23andMe and a BioNano partnership is low. Again, I'm just speaking by my own thoughts. I'm not representing any either party or entity here. But the reason being is, and let me sort of explain my rationale here, is that 23andMe serves as a direct-to-consumer genetic testing company. And their technology that powers their data right now, currently, is using something called a SNP, a SNP, or single nucleotide polymorphism genotyping array. Now, that's a jumble of words. What does that mean? So a SNP genotyping array essentially checks for predetermined hotspots within the human genome. So it actually, 23andMe, it actually, within their given tests, looks at, you know, less than 1-2% of the genome. And what they're really trying to focus on, they're trying to focus on where we specifically have genetic variation. So in one location, they're asking, okay, well, some people may have a G, a letter, you know, base pair G here, while other people may have a T. And people who have a G, I'm just making this as an example, are more likely to have red hair than not, for example. Now, conversely, if you look at OGM and what BioNano is doing, the nature of structural variation is that they're pretty rare. And you won't be seeing similar, well, the same structural variations across the board in the general population. And so I don't necessarily think that it's 100% applicable for direct-to-consumer testing, because oftentimes when people do 23andMe, and really they're just serve different purposes. I've done 23andMe, but typically people do the testing without a specific indication for testing. Like, you know, they're looking for understanding or diagnosing a cancer diagnosis, or, you know, a genetic syndrome, for example. So that's the reason why I think that the partnership possibility is low.
It certainly feels, based on what you're explaining to me, that if it ever was to happen, it would be pretty far in the future. We're way ahead of ourselves to think that that would happen anytime soon, if it ever would.
Yeah, probably. But again, I never say never, and totally open-minded to how the genomics field plays out.
Yeah, I'm always one to not shy away from asking a question that comes to mind, because I always figure if I have that question, there might be somebody else out there that has that same question.
Totally, so, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess going back to OGM, why, if I remember the article correctly, you believe that eventually it will replace gold standard cytogenetic tests. So I'm just wondering on if you have any specific reasons why you believe this.
Yeah. So as I was mentioning, I think OGM is well positioned to be, and is, the sort of a Swiss Army knife of you get a 3-in-1 for all the things that we are already existingly doing in standard, gold standard cytogenetic tests, and you get more. And they're able to do this cost effectively, reliably, and at scale. I go into more detail about the reasons why a little bit more in my article, but just to sort of give your listeners a little bit of a overview here, some reasons why I think that eventually it will replace gold standard cytogenetic tests is it's cost effective. So BioNano's current cost per genome is around $450, and I read somewhere, I think, that it's expected to be less than $100 by 2023. So that's comparable, if not a lot cheaper, than a lot of the existing gold standard cytogenetic tests. The other thing is that resolution gets down to 500 base pairs, which is a lot better than, for example, microarrays, which really only go down to about 50,000 base pairs. And karyotypes only about 5 to 10 million range. So if you think about the plane analogy, it can go much lower as a cruising altitude than, for example, the existing technologies. Some other reasons why I think it's just a good idea is that the other is variants can basically be detected in very small samples. So what I mean by that is BioNano's technology, because it looks at single molecule images, they're able to detect variants present in a very small percentage of the sample. This can be very, very useful in cancer testing because oftentimes cancer cells are really sort of heterogeneous, like a mixed bag of different mutations. Like some cells may have certain mutations, others may have other mutations. And so BioNano can be really helpful in being able to identify structural variations in that application. I think the other reason could be that it's just, you know, shorter turnaround time for results and is less labor intensive, which in certain situations can be really critical to get a proper diagnosis and be able to inform what treatment management options are the best way to go. And BioNano is sort of a step up above some of these other, you know, standard cytogenetic tests. And yeah, I can tell you firsthand when I have counseled some patients in really tough situations, time is often of essence, and you know, the sort of limitation of a technology taking like a week to get results is both agonizing psychologically and also really difficult to be able to act promptly. So that's, you know, sort of another reason why I think OGM can really replace it. So right now it's really only used for research use only, but I think it has a lot of promise in the clinic. And if you kind of, for those that have stuck around long enough or in the genomic space, it's similar to how next generation sequencing or NGS, what Illumina does basically, essentially replaced all of the old school version of Sanger sequencing in recent years. I think a similar transition will go for OGM.
Great, thanks for that answer. And I think it's a good segue into my next selfish question. So as a non-expert in this field, but I am a passionate investor in the future, and especially when it comes to biotech, one of the things I've really struggled with is sometimes comparing different technologies, especially in genomics. For example, I'm currently an investor, you might be aware, in Lexigene, which is a company that sells PCR devices, and they detect genetic targets. And it made me think of this because you were mentioning, you know, time is important. And that's one of the things that they sell, is that typically the healthcare practitioners need to send samples away and wait, you know, sometimes days, weeks to get an answer and to know how to treat the patients. So they can do that at the point of care in 2 hours. But I think many of our listeners would be interested in knowing if OGM, given that they've heard me talk about PCR before, I'm just wondering if OGM is similar to PCR. Mm-hmm. Is one going to make the other one go away? Are they even comparable? Like, are they even competitors? Or is there a possibility that these two technologies could somehow work together in the future to improve patient outcomes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the answer, your short answer is that PCR is different from OGM. How it's different, PCR basically amplifies, by amplify I mean make a lot of different copies of short sections of the DNA. So it's like basically a very highly specialized copy machine that creates, like, you know, thousands of copies of a short segment of the DNA. And it's useful to be used as a magnifying glass for hotspot areas. So in the context of Lexigene, yeah, that makes a lot of sense because they're trying to specialize in detecting specific pathogens. And so you do need that pick a needle out of the haystack approach and try to really hone in and on a specific signal. In contrast, I think OGM takes a a little bit more higher level, broader landscape view. They look at the whole genome for structural variations. And so that means, you know, they're not focusing on one particular specific area in the genome. Although recently, I've recently learned that they may have the potential to use specific probes to basically get better than the 500 base pair resolution that I was just mentioning for certain genome regions. Like if they really want to zoom in on like the specific gene and the specific area in the genome, they have potential to do that using specific probes. I'm not sure if that's using PCR. But I did come across that they have that patent and they are looking at that. So, yeah.
Awesome. You've probably touched on this a little bit, but I'm interested in practical uses of OGM, if you have specific examples. So I'm wondering which types of clinics or hospitals that you think could add value to their practice, like today, by using OGM. And if you don't mind, like if they were to start using that, how would they use it?
Yeah. So, BioNano already has a lot of several clinical partners who seem to really love what this new technology can enable them. So that's a great sign, both as an investor and an understanding of their company and their promise. Of course, it's still, I'm pretty sure it's still, research only, but it will begin to transition into the clinic very soon. I mentioned this in the article. I think cancer is and will likely continue to be a really prominent use case for OGM. And the reason being is it's a bit unintuitive to grasp, but basically 100% of the cancer cases are genetic in the sense that there's always some sort of genetic aberrations in cancer cells. And a lot of times that can be structural variations. So OGM can be really helpful in being able to pick these up in a way that gene sequencing can't easily do. So I can foresee OGM being present in some oncology clinics and hospitals, and they can be used to diagnose more patients faster. So for example, they would just take a biopsy of the tumor, for example, and be able to identify potential new gene targets for new cancer therapies. If you're talking about in the research context, being translated into clinical practice. There's some other ones that I also mentioned, and I'm not sure how in detail we want to go into that, but some other ones and areas could be in the pediatric and maybe prenatal setting where they're trying to diagnose children with some neurodevelopmental delays or autism. A lot of times right now in these genetic clinics, microarray and also fragile X testing is sort of the first line genetic test that's being ordered for these kids. And I can foresee OGM essentially replacing those two because you get more information more reliably and potentially faster as well. The other application that I am interested in seeing more of, I haven't really seen anyone talk about it or any studies that are people working on it, is actually embryo screening for chromosomal abnormalities. So I'm a reproductive genetic counselor, so this is sort of my jam and area. But yes, it would be interesting to see if OGM can be used for embryo screening for aneuploidy, otherwise known as PGTA, or structural rearrangements, or PGTA-SR, both abbreviations that totally doesn't matter. I don't know if there's any technical limitations, but given that over 40% of all IVF cycles, at least in the United States, include some form of genetic testing for the embryos, it's a big market, and I haven't seen anyone talk about it yet. And again, I think it can potentially replace existing methods for embryo testing. Right now, either companies use microarray or sequencing technology. And the problem with that is that structural variations can be very easily missed or incorrectly reported. So it's a question mark, and I don't know the answer to it, is whether OGM can help solve those issues in the foreseeable future.
Super interesting. And one, as a pharmacist, one of the things that I've experienced is some of these clinics, some of these hospitals are quite large and have, you know, several locations oftentimes. So introducing any kind of change can be a lengthy and difficult process, because you need to have a bunch of different people approve it. And then they have to go through a long line of approvals and things like that to actually implement the change. I'm wondering if maybe this is one of the challenges that BioNano is going to run into. Do you know if somebody was to change and go and use BioNano instead of the technologies they're using now, is it a big change as far as the software and equipment, or is it more, you know, getting things approved and things moving along? Mm-hmm. Do you know any of that, or?
Well, I'm not firsthand directly in the day-to-day of like lab operations, but I can give you a sense of what my gut feeling would be. I think in general, that's one of the biggest challenges for BioNano, and I mentioned that, is that justifying sort of the switching costs for legacy techniques, as I was mentioning, the sort of gold standard of cytogenetic testing right now, to OGM is a really massive undertaking, and it can take a long, long time. And you're asking whether or not it's because of the software or the equipment or the process. I think it's a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, let's say that you are a lab and you want to transition into using OGM more than your existing technologies. Well, first of all, you would have to buy or rent an OGM machine, which is a really big thing and a very big investment. And then second of all, you know, labs, they are the ones, BioNano has already mentioned this before, but labs, the third party labs that actually are the customers for BioNano, are the ones that are doing all the work in making it happen. They're the ones that are developing the assay. They're picking an indication to really focus on using the technology of OGM. They're determining, you know, how they're going to report all this to their doctors and the patients. They need to do all these validation tests. All of that needs to happen before they're even able to offer this test for a doctor to order it. So it's a lot of upfront time and effort that they need to decide, that labs need to decide whether it's, you know, worthwhile for them. And that's sort of my concern about the challenges that BioNano faces, is acceptance of the utility of it within the scientific and clinical community. And I think they're doing a really good job, and as much as they can, to sort of turn the tides and get more people interested in it. At the same time, I know that given that there is such this high barrier of entry, you know, even if the data, clinical data on BioNano's value is really compelling, it still may not convince everyone, because it's a huge hassle to switch from legacy techniques.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm optimistic that, given the cost and all that, I'm optimistic that they're going to think about the patients first, because to me, and again, I'm not an expert, but from what I'm hearing, from what I'm seeing in my little bit of research that I did, it seems like this is in the best interest of the patients. And hopefully we can find a way to convince these companies to take the leap of faith and spend a little bit more money short term to highly benefit from it long term, and to benefit the patients.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the patient experience and the improvement of patient outcomes always should come first, especially if we're talking about the clinical realm. BioNano has, you know, obviously another separate market within research applications. But when we're talking about the clinical application, of course, we always need to focus on, is this actually going to provide value and benefit the patients in the long run? And that should really be the point of sort of focus and area when labs are deciding whether or not to adopt OGM or not.
Exactly. I just want to switch gears a little bit. And I remember in the article, you mentioned something about still, I don't know exactly how you worded it, but still being on the sidelines and you hadn't bought any shares in BNGO. Have you dipped your toes a little bit, or are you still watching?
To be honest, I still do not have any position still. It takes me a while to understand something, and even longer to have this sort of decisive conviction about something. And considering how the BioNano stock and unfortunately and the biotech market in general has just been dipping and pretty volatile lately, it doesn't feel like I'm missing out quite yet. I also, you know, I've referred to this and references a lot, but I come from a clinical and research background. So I've only really, really recently begun to think seriously about investing. So I'm, you know, still learning, but the type of investor that I aim to become and achieve is sort of like being a very precise sniper, one that shoots really rarely and tries to aim for a very high hit rate. And I think the reason for that is because the truth of the matter is the majority of the excess returns are a result of very small number of stellar companies that grow into giants. And, you know, the broad indices really only are a fraction of these really outliers returns. So I'm starting with biotech investing because it's an area where I have some degree of insight on and have the ability to understand deeply. And I'm in general very bullish and very optimistic about just biology and genomics and biotech in general. I think it's where the 21st century is heading. And I'm really excited to be, you know, part of it and in this moment in time in history.
Great, great. And I'm making assumptions about your age, and I'm not going to ask you to reveal it, but you sound very young. So I think you have plenty of time to jump in from what I can tell. It's at the very beginning, and to whether it's BNGO or another company, you don't have to, in my opinion, you don't have to rush in.
Thanks for that. I mean, I think the genomic market and biotech in general is really large, and there's going to be a lot of players. I think BioNano has really defined a specific niche that differentiates them from others, which makes them so compelling to, I think, a lot of investors. And also was the reason why I wanted to dig more into it and understand a little bit more. I don't think it's inconceivable that I'll start a small position in it like very soon, actually, especially given that it's, you know, unfortunately dipped quite a bit recently. So, but you know, I don't know if you come across this meme, but it's this guy holding a coffee cup and he's like staring at the camera and being like, I bought the dip, but it's still dipping. And I don't know if that's going to be the similar case for BioNano. I hope not.
I have seen that meme and I have lived that meme. And I'm sure a lot of the listeners have lived that meme many times over and over again. Trading, investing is super hard. And the tricky part is there really is thousands of different ways to do it successfully, but there's even more different ways to do it unsuccessfully. So right. I think one of the things I always come back to is it's really important to test out different things and to figure out what works for you. Because when it gets stressful, if you don't have conviction in your method or in your strategy, you're going to make the wrong decision. Your intuition, your emotions are going to do something that you shouldn't be doing at the exact wrong time. And from my experience, this happens to the smartest people in the world. and the people that you think know the stock market inside out. So it's really interesting. And I don't know how much research you do on investing in that, but it's been a passion of mine for over 10 years now. And I will not claim that I have it figured out, but yeah. I do know many ways to lose for sure.
Totally. Yeah. No, I'm very happy to be having this conversation and connecting with you. It's awesome to learn from more experienced investors within the field and just kind of getting exposure. As you mentioned, still a long way for me and also for the genomics field to really play out.
Absolutely. There's one question. This is a question I ask a lot of like my friends and a lot of people randomly. Do you mind sharing me your strangest DM on Twitter? And also, if you have something interesting, I'm wondering if like who's the most famous or exciting person that you've interacted with via DM on Twitter? Because sometimes like I find Twitter is a really exciting place where you get to chat with people that you're like, I can't believe I actually got to talk to that person. I'm just wondering if you've experienced that yet.
Yeah, it's interesting that you asked that. I have not really had too big of a Twitter presence so far, but I can tell you that writing online and starting my own Substack, Health and Wealth, since this September has, and therefore by extension, sort of the things that I share on Twitter, has led to some really fascinating interactions. Some of them have been very incredibly helpful. Some have been sort of thought-provoking. Some people have asked really great questions. Some have been just honestly very heartwarming. And then there's also some on the spectrum that's a little bit off-putting or a little creepy. So I think that's all part of the experience and it's been a fun ride so far. I think the benefit of writing online is that you get to attract like-minded people and you find that by courtesy of the internet, some niches are actually not as niche and small as you think. Regarding what's the strangest DM I've received, I don't really want to put anyone, any specific person on the spot. So I'll just answer by saying, I've gotten a few unprofessional DMs from older men or someone who was just unreasonably antagonistic towards me and claiming that I was pumping and dumping stocks that I write about, which is absolutely not true and never my intention. It's interesting to always have these sort of interactions and exposure, but I really view them as just another part of understanding the world a little bit more. It's like traveling to see a foreign country. You see a little bit of good, a little bit bad, sometimes ugly. But I would say by and large, the number of positive interactions has far outweighed the negative. So I definitely intend to keep playing the long game, continue writing, because I find that it really helps accelerate my learning and sharpen my thinking and also connect with people that I wouldn't have otherwise connected with. So we're having this conversation today because I had posted online about my thoughts on BioNano. So, yeah.
Exactly. And I kind of share the same thoughts that you have, that the positive outweighs the negative by a landslide, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I also want to touch on, I do realize I want to respect your time. I'll keep it as short as I can here. I do want to touch a little bit on pumping since you mentioned it. And I think it's such a fine line because the way I see it is a lot of people are genuinely excited about these companies or excited about the technology or about the future. So it's really hard sometimes. And I've sort of fallen into that trap as well of like, you want to share the news, you want to share the message, you want others to be excited about it. So how can you do it without, to some people, seeming like a pumper? So it's a fine line. It's a really tricky one. but I get how some people sometimes, you know, get irritated, or maybe they did buy the stock when it was up and now it's down. So they want to sort of, you know, have their little bit of revenge because they feel like maybe you were a part of them buying or whatnot. But it's definitely a really tricky and fine line. But I think as long as you let people know that, you know, it's not investment advice and you're not an expert of the markets and all that, I think, you know, people at the end of the day need to make their own decisions, and nobody is forcing them to click on the buy button when they're on their brokerage account or whatnot. So it's
yeah,
tricky.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think in general, how I view it is, you know, when you're talking about any company that you're not inside of, which is most of us, I would just keep it as, you know, objective as possible. And for me personally, the purpose of writing Health and Wealth is for me to learn more, and have a broader scope and understanding of things outside of my work and sort of immediate day to day. But do that in a sort of Bayesian approach and thinking. You know, I may not always be right, but I'm here to try to learn how I can be less wrong over time. And you'll kind of see in my writing that I try to check myself as much as possible. I, you know, on one hand, when I present something that I'm really optimistic or favorable towards, I also present the sort of other side, which is like, what are some of the challenges or risks that they need to address? And not everything, basically nothing is of a 100% guarantee, binary thing, like this is definitely going to happen kind of thing. There's always sort of unknowns, risks, and it's always important, even if you're a long-term investor in a stock, that you understand those and you fully understand what the opposition or bears or whatever naysayers are saying. And you can hold both of those two views simultaneously. So that's how I sort of approach it. And hopefully it comes across in my writing that I'm genuine and I'm really, the purpose is never to, you know, try to pump stocks. It's never my intention.
Yeah. And in my opinion, just to be clear, in my opinion, you do come across exactly the way that you're describing it. And it was one of the reasons why I really wanted to approach you and ask you if we could do something on the podcast. It was clear that you were very excited, but I really appreciated that you sort of made sure that we were looking at it from different views and it wasn't all, you know, this is the best company ever kind of thing. So I really appreciated that in your writing style. And so here we are today and having this wonderful conversation. Sorry, go ahead.
Go for it.
Yeah, I want to ask you just one more question. And I want you to forget about diagnostics, forget about the NGO or even genome sequencing for a minute. And I want you to share with us if you think there is a technology or a change that you see coming in 10 years that most people might not realize is going to have a significant impact on society.
Yeah. You know, I think just sticking within the biology sphere first, there's a lot of different things I'm excited about. I'm a genetic counselor by training, but I have a lot of sort of outside interests and things that I'm excited about. Some things that come to mind include recent advances in commercialization and also sort of the translation of extending healthy human life span and health span. There are some interesting players being introduced now in the synthetic biology world, where I believe within, in the coming 10 years or so, can really help create new products that can impact all of us in a hopefully beneficial way, and improving the environment and human health and in our food sources. And I think the last area that is sort of on my mind is the personalization of nutrition. So being able to better take into account the complexity of human biology and human variation when we talk about recommendations for what we should eat. Those are some things within the biology sphere, obviously not comprehensive and inclusive. I think society as a whole, I would view myself as a sort of a cautious optimist, in that I really deeply believe in the goodness and ingenuity of people to improve and advance humanity. And despite all of our flaws and setbacks and cognitive biases, I really do believe that. And I think, some areas beyond biology would just be, automation, technology, so self-driving cars, humanoid-like robots, or virtual simulations, all in the name of trying to help better people's lives, their relationships, and their sort of well-being and productivity within our society. So those are just some things.
So much to look forward to.
Definitely.
Yeah. Christina, where can people find you? And is there anything else you would like to share that we have not gone over yet? But I want to give you just the opportunity to, I'm sure some people are really interested in what you shared with us today. So if there's an ideal way for them to reach out to you, here's your chance to share that info.
Yeah, sure. I appreciate it. I think the best way for people to catch up and keep up to date about what I'm thinking about and what I'm researching is probably my Substack. So it's, again, just healthandwealth.substack.com. I just recently started it, really, about 2 months ago. So it's still relatively new to me, but I aim to try to publish on a weekly cadence. Most of them are my unique in-depth analysis on certain biotech companies or health trends, or just really anything that I'm drawn to and curious about. So that's probably the best way for your listeners to engage with my work. If they are, curious, they want to subscribe, it basically goes directly into their inbox every week. I try to publish on Tuesdays. It's currently free, so no cost or anything to you guys. The other way is probably if you want to give me a follow on Twitter. Currently have both a personal and a health and wealth account, which gets a little confusing because it's both me, but you can follow my Twitter account at health and wealth gen, or GEN. There's an abbreviation for generation. So I think those are probably the two best ways that people can reach out to me, Health and Wealth, and also Twitter. My DMs are open. And also, if you are a subscriber to my Substack, you can always just reply to any email that you get from me, and I'll get it directly to my email, and I always reply.
That's awesome. Thanks a lot. Thank you so much for doing this, Christina. This has been fantastic. And I wish you the best, and I hope to get to read more of your articles in the near future.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was a great talking with you.
Sounds good. Bye.
I want to thank everyone for listening to our conversation in this episode. I have posted Christina's Substack link in the show notes, and I encourage you to follow her on Twitter. I also would love to get your feedback if you have any, so you can reach me at @Guy_LeBlanc, so GUY_LEBLANC on Twitter, or simply go to iTunes and give me a rating and leave some feedback so that I can take that and make it better for you and everyone else. Thanks again, and take care.